This is the Friday, August 5th, 2016 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Ted Seifert. Ted, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, we are glad to have you. And before we get too far into it, I want to pick up where we'd left off on the show. We promised to talk about corn demand,
yep.
And you had mentioned we are expected to see some corn sales going into Brazil. When and how much? What kind of a market impact would that have?
Well, the when is a good question because they're currently working and trying to get the approval to import GMO corn. And you know, it's fairly obvious that they're doing that to be able to import our corn. How much is a great question. You know, from the peak of where their estimates were back in March, they lost almost the equivalent of 560 million bushels of corn. Off their what they thought they had for production. So at this point, they're not making any sales of corn because they may have overextended themselves already. and they're going to need corn for feed. So you think it could be, you know, at least a few million metric tons of corn, if not quite a bit more than that. So that is a very positive thing. It could give us a significant boost to our exports here for this coming year. But not only that. They're also likely to source a fair amount of the corn needs from Argentina. They usually do. A lot of that's regional, you know, the southern half of Brazil in particular. So that might take Argentina off the global export market to a big extent as well, which might leave us as really being, you know, the main player in the global export market aside from the Black Sea region. So, yeah, I mean, on a lot of different levels, that really does speak well to the potential for our exports here this year. And,
yeah.
And even just in the last few weeks, we've seen some very strong export sales in corn without Brazilian demand into that because they're not quite ready for that yet. And then you look at ethanol. And ethanol maybe for me is just as interesting, maybe even more interesting of a story. Just like the corn crop in Brazil, with the late season dryness had a significant downgrade, so did their sugarcane crop. And with sugar prices being as high as they are, a lot of that sugarcane that would normally be used for ethanol is now actually getting used to produce sugar. And a lot of that sugar is going for export. So they're going to have a hard time keeping up with the massive ethanol demand that they have down in Brazil because they're very dependent on ethanol. Mm-hmm. So there are some thoughts that up to 500 million liters of ethanol, which translates to about 135, 140 million gallons of ethanol deficit that they're going to need to fill, and it's very likely going to be from our corn ethanol.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's going to keep ethanol demand strong. You've got export demand for corn potentially being strong. You've got very good on-feed numbers. Weights are probably going to stay up with cheap corn inputs. I mean, with cheap corn prices and cheap input costs. So across the board, corn demand is maybe looking the best that it's ever been right now.
But that sets up, I mean, as we watch those things develop, as we watch corn demand and ethanol demand, particularly from Brazil, I mean, that is a fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to play out here as we get post-harvest. That's going to be December, January. In the meantime, let's go back to that FC Stone 175
sure.
bushel an acre number.
Right.
Where are we going to put all this corn, and how much is storage going to impact farmers' bottom lines as we get into harvest?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, you know, where are we going to put this corn is a good question. There's going to be a lot of corn piles this year. Hopefully, guys have been aggressive in price things, so it's maybe not their problem so much,
okay.
You know. Because, I mean, if you got 60% of your corn crop priced, I mean, we were talking about back in January and December, or January, February, March, for our clients, we had a target of cash prices, start selling at 405, but be 60% sold by 444. That was our target. Drew a big red marker around it in all the presentations we were giving earlier in this year. and that worked well. We didn't have a reason as far as why we'd go up there. I mean, there was a lot of weather talk,
mm-hmm.
But from a technical perspective, that's where we thought we'd go. So, but if you don't have much sold, then you've got to store everything on farm or look at commercial storage. I mean, that is a really tough nut to crack
yeah.
because everybody's going to competing for storage
right.
this year.
Start making those plans today if you haven't yet already. Next question I want to get to we didn't get to on the show was cotton. Saw another 270 higher on cotton. That market has been on fire for 3 weeks.
Absolutely.
What's your next target?
Oof. Well, it's a weather market. So, you know, we kind of throw targets out the window.
Okay.
It's more of a price action thing and a, you know, overbought, oversold sort of thing than it is a specific number. But you look at the cotton market, you look, it's very much a weather market, you know, with the you've got two major growing regions in the U.S. that are under pressure right now. You've got Texas and you've got the Southeast, both in drought type conditions. And that, along with the fact that cotton price has been low for a long enough period of time, that global production and the global carryover has come down as well. So it's sort of a perfect storm. It kind of would eventually, we kind of hope would happen in the grain markets, but you know, we didn't cut production in corn this year. But anyways, cotton, you know, you've got guys stuck short, both commercials and speculators. This could get really interesting. Now, something that could throw a very wet blanket on it, literally, would be a much wetter forecast in Texas, for example. Okay. Or a significant drop in the global stock markets, global economy concerns, things like that. But for right now, you got to love the price action that you're seeing in cotton, and you got to think there's more upside potential short of a big change in the weather outlook or a big change in the global economy.
All right. Now, I want to get some of our questions here from our Twitter and Facebook followers. And we did this last week. We did a rapid fire with Angie Setzer. We want to do the same thing, Ted. We're gonna move right through. And we got a lot of people curious about a lot of things. Start with Roger. We've touched on this before. Roger says, all the hype about the grain markets, grain crop markets, makes the price fall before one kernel is harvested. And then he's asking, is the farmer getting the shaft again? Or my follow-up is, we're pricing in all of these huge yields. Yeah. Does that give us an opportunity?
Well, it's all about perspective. It's all about perception, you know. And yes, when USDA has 76% good to excellent, and when everybody's talking about how huge this corn crop is potentially, you're going to start hearing these big yield estimates. I would love to hear 178, 179. I'm not saying that. I'd like somebody else to say that. I'd like to factor in something ridiculous like that and keep corn above 325. Because if we can do that, and then, like in 14, when we started talking 176, 177, and it ended up with 171, we had a very nice rally come October. Mm-hmm. I think very much like 14, we're going to factor in a much bigger number than what the reality is, and then we can have an early or maybe even pre-harvest rally like we did in 14, and have a nice recovery. That recovery is going to be spurred by all the demand we've talked about. You know, I mean, that demand there was not something anybody's paying attention to right now. But once we get this yield situation out of the way, and as long as it's not much bigger, as long as that number doesn't actually keep growing and doesn't end up being bigger than what we're all thinking right now, I think you have a very nice pop in store for the corn market at some point.
We're setting the stage.
We're setting the stage. I like how we're doing that. Yeah.
Next question. Dwayne in Britton, South Dakota wants to know, is it safe to buy December hogs yet?
Good job, Dwayne. yeah, we kind of touched on that too. I'm not so sure about that. We keep trying to say that we're extremely oversold and, you know, it's safe to get in the water at this point. But every time we do that, and I keep telling Dwayne we need to keep tight stops, and we keep getting stopped out. So from a speculative point of view, you know, every time we make new lows in RSI and every time we make new lows in the hog market, it gets more and more attractive. But gosh, I don't know, Dwayne. We're going to have to spin that question back on to you next time we talk.
How pricey are calls here in the lean hog market?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Well, we've sucked a lot of the premium out of calls at this point. So if you're going to, just like we were talking about in wheat, a way to approach that might be by using the call options. The only thing is that every time you buy call options, within a couple of days, they're worthless because we've moved so far away from them. But that being said, you know, I mean, we said that about, you know, buying puts in corn or buying puts in soybeans when we were up near our highs just a couple months ago. You know, when you have violent moves, a lot of times they're answered with violent moves. And you could see something like that in hogs, okay, especially as the scenario we were talking about earlier where, you know, China's gaming the market and does come in and make significant purchases. All of a sudden, we've got a brand new scenario, brand new narrative for hogs, and that could get very interesting. So it's not a bad way to approach it.
Okay. Phil in Ontario, Canada, asked us several questions. I want to go to his second one.
Yeah.
How low do corn prices need to go for American farmers to plant less in 2017?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Phil. And we were asking ourselves that question last year.
Yes.
And it went the other way, by 5 million acres or so, according to the USDA. You know, it's going to be tough. It's how do you tell a firefighter to stop fighting fires? How do you tell a police officer to stop being a police officer?
Right.
Producers are producers. We're going to produce a crop one way or another. you know, I guess there's a scenario that exists where soybean prices are trading $12 and corn prices are trading $2.80. Maybe that does something like that. But it's hard to say it's what it will take to reduce acres significantly.
Until we start to see those acres decline.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those, it's an individual farm basis.
It's gotta, I think more than anything, it's got to come from the banking side of things.
Okay.
And if we can't get the financing to do it, then there's the issue. But until that happens, we're going to plant the acres if we, you know, we're going to plant the acres anything we can, really.
All right. Final question for you, Ted. We've been doing our Market Plus educational sessions.
Yeah.
We want you to answer, what is a black swan when we talk about that in relation to the markets?
Sure. A black swan event. And that's a word that, I first remember hearing that term, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's something we talked about a lot when we were hitting our highs in 2012. Black, and in this case, you know, there's been some talk about, contrary to everything we just talked about corn demand, you know, falling apart and things like that. A black swan event is something that can very negatively impact a market, but not just a market, maybe an industry as a whole that we don't see coming, or usually don't have a lot of foresight to see coming. And obviously has a very negative impact, and it's something that we don't want to see. But there's black swan events all the time when it comes
subprime mortgage crisis in 2008.
Was black swan event. Didn't have anything to do with grain markets, but certainly had a huge impact on prices. That's a fantastic example.
All right. Well, Ted Seifert, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to all of you for sending in your questions via Facebook and Twitter. Please continue to do so. We will get expert analysis right to you. Thanks for watching, and have a great week.